Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jennifer Masters.
Hey, whose voice has raised a bit since last week.
Oh, yes. Did you hear that?
Jen never listens.
No, exactly.
In which case, nothing happened.
Nothing
Let's carry
happened
on.
Last week.
What?
Nothing whatsoever.
I did a slight impression.
Oh.
It was brilliant.
It was brilliant.
It was flawless. It was the most accurate. Frankly, it was more believable than you are right now.
Yeah. Should I play it in? You can hear it.
Oh! Welcome to Movie Matter. I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jenny Masters.
The operation works.
Oh, yes. Very well, thank you.
It seems to change your geographical location as well.
Oh, a little bit.
I think you're fine. Well, yeah. That was very accurate indeed.
How did you do that for?
Just that was it then. That was
Paul did the entire podcast performing as you.
Exactly.
As well.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, it was like you were in the room with us.
Well, kind of flattered, actually. Yeah.
Don't be, that was a lie.
Oh.
It was about as long as that bit you just heard.
Yeah.
Which may not have gone through, but hopefully people will have heard it.
I'm
Jenny Masters.
Wow, oh dear.
There's two of you. Exactly, yeah.
Hang on,
we're all Jenny Masters.
Now there's two of you, and I'm the king.
Anyway, welcome to this episode. This week we will talk about Bruno Potter and the half-blood gay Austrian. Harry Potter, new Harry Potter film out, and also our thoughts on Bruno, as well as
We've
other things.
Yeah.
Well, that's always a good way to start a review, having seen it.
Yeah.
I think that goes without saying, really, surely.
It'd be kind of interesting to have a podcast based entirely about reviewing films we haven't seen. But we're just sort of reporting what we think they're probably
sort of hearsay, yes. Movie hearsay.
Yeah. Rumour reviews.
Yeah, nice.
I've not heard about this, but it sounds awful.
Yeah. Also this week we've got In This Week of Movie History.
Yay!
And Desert Island Flicks, which this week we're going to be doing. What are we doing this week?
Child performances.
Best child performance, yes.
Inspired by Harry Potter,
indeed.
But not relating to Harry Potter in any way whatsoever.
Delightedly not inspired by Bruno. Many child performances.
No, there are
some child performances, yeah. but yes, thankfully more Harry Potter based.
Yeah.
So what should we lead with?
I'd be inclined to lead off with Harry Potter.
Let's do some Harry Potter.
Largely because I've just seen it, or Jen and I have just seen it, this very morning / early afternoon. We've been restraining from talking about it.
I know, I have no idea if you will approve or disapprove, so yeah, go for it now, let's see.
Apparently, this is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which is the sixth film and sixth book, which sounds obvious, but by the time of the next one, it's going to be the eighth film and seventh book, because the seventh film is going to be, the seventh book is going to be two films.
Right.
But this is the sixth and sixth. And essentially, you basically know it all by now. It's Harry Potter, Magic Wizard, and the like, and his friends getting into wacky japes. And personally, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh.
I think the films have been getting better and better. I don't know. Well, this is probably on a par with the last one. I enjoyed the last one a lot.
Mm.
And this one's probably about the same, I think, in terms of overall experience. But the criticism, I can see Jen is sort of waiting to level the criticism against it.
Well,
which, not criticism, but it's sort of a comment, which is also true of the book. Which is
what actually happened?
Not much is the answer.
Oh no, really?
No, this is the trouble, and it's the same. I had exactly the same feeling when I read the sixth book, which is that you read the book, and I whipped right through it, loved it, very entertained. Think, oh, brilliant! This is happening, enjoying it all. Get to the very end, big finish. Things happen at the end, and then you think, right.
So
overall, all arc plot wise. Mm. You could have handled this in sort of the first chapter of the first of the last book, really.
Right.
Mm.
Nothing happens of any significance.
Yes.
Very little happens of any significance. Towards the end, it wraps up a few things and stuff happens. But largely, it's kind of a self-contained wizarding adventure, which gets you ready for the final two films.
Yeah.
I think the main reason for this, though, is because we are, again, I think this has come up before, we are slightly older than the target market for this. And the people who grew up with Harry Potter books, the people at the age it was originally marketed for, because obviously everyone enjoys these books and these films, and great, you know, that's fantastic. But they're all becoming hormonal teenagers. And this is actually what I think a lot of the film's about. It's quite dark, but it's also starting to get a bit more grown up, talking about boyfriends and girlfriends and things like that, which to the main story arc has very little significance.
Yeah, it's kind of separated out the two bits, really. But all the hormonal stuff is pitched nicely, I thought, because there's lots of sort of, oh, but you fancy her and he fancies you and who fancies them.
Is there a bit where Hermione becomes a woman?
No,
not
quite. Fair enough.
But there are... It, it, it could have been done in such a way that it's all teenage angsty longing and irritating, and it's all played very light.
Yeah,
with a bit of minor heartbreak and things like. But it's all very watchable and entertaining to watch, rather than just sitting there as a grown man looking at these. I think they're meant to be 16, must be
something
16
like
or 17,
yeah.
17 by this though. And yeah, it could have been just you sit there watching it thinking, oh, it's so agonising, awful, and why am I watching it?
It's not Ron Weasley going, why do nice girls hate me? Here's some poetry.
Exactly, no, it's all very much the love potions. And,
right.
Yeah, and it does tie in with Hogwarts. This is definitely...
Yes, it's all in a magical way.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just, if you... When you get to the end of it, if you just think back over it, what's happened and what's about to happen,
you're
suddenly thinking, yeah, this is a 2.5-hour film that... in plot terms, could have been about half an hour.
It's a problem I've seen in actually a few of these Harry Potter films, because I haven't read any of the books at all. Seen all the films once.
Yeah.
So I haven't been back over and reviewed them at all. Mm. And so I'm probably not quite accurate on this, but it seems that the end of most of the Harry Potter films, they sort of either face Voldemort or don't. And then they always end up by saying, oh, well, that means that next time we'll really have to face Voldemort. And you go, okay, roll on the next film, next book, whatever.
Yeah.
And it does look like, I mean, unlike, you know... Something like, for me, I grew up reading the Chronicles of Narnia, for example,
yes.
Which seem to be sort of standalone books, different adventures, but they are sort of standalone. A lot of the Harry Potter stuff seems to be always an eye on the saga and always building up to the fact that it's always going to have a big finish. And,
it's a little bit
schizophrenic. Let's see what happens next then. But you've got to think, okay, another film, another year wait for the next one.
You know there's always going to be, pretty much, obviously... Harry Voldemort final confrontation.
A big showdown, yeah.
But you also knew it was going to be at the end of seventh, so we always had to fill the intervening space.
Yeah.
Which is why sort of cinematically you can criticise it, but in terms of just sitting in the cinema watching it, I thoroughly enjoyed it and loved every second.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, because Voldemort isn't even in this one, it's far more.
Well, he is in a way.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no, his presence, the fact that he exists, is important in this film. But the character, we don't see him at any point.
Okay, not Voldemort. You're right.
That's why I said Voldemort.
Tom Riddle, we do.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, no, that is true. Yes, we see him as a younger boy, sort of memories. Yeah. And yeah, no, that's a good point, yes. But there's no Ralph Fiennes.
No.
With no-nose and magic stuff. Yeah. Which also...
my Voldemort's got no nose. How does he smell?
Oh, yeah. And while the finish... I mean, lots of people... Oh, Jen, you didn't know how it ends.
No, I didn't.
Which, you know, and won't ruin it now, but because when the book came out, it was a famous spoiler to shout at people what happens at the end of this. But, of course, won't ruin it what happens, but things happen.
No.
But the end of the last film was better, I thought, because it had a big battle. Voldemort's returned, and no one knew if he was going to, and now he's back, and there's a big, big fight. And that made for brilliant watching. Absolutely love that. The end of this one is far more understated. It actually felt... almost literally like the end of The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
At the very end, because you see the three kids standing at the top of a tower, sort of looking out over Hogwarts, knowing a battle is coming, and sort of camera zooms out from them. And so it does feel... It's not a rip-off of Empire Strikes Back, because that was hardly the first to do it, but there was definitely a sense of the end is coming, and there's a final battle. There were also... One person I saw is either on Twitter or Facebook, someone saying, oh, I can't believe the innuendo and phallic imagery in this.
Really?
And I don't know, I was just expecting pure filth, wall to wall. And it's really not.
No.
But there are one or two, because of all the hormonal things, there are one or two bits. There's one point which, again, it's depending on the age. I mean, kids wouldn't read anything into it. Teenagers probably would. Filthy-minded adults like us definitely did. Because there's a bit of tension building between Harry and Ginny Weasley. And they're about to say goodnight to each other, and she spots his shoelaces untied, sort of kneels down in front of him.
Oh, dear.
And so it's just... If you're childish...
At the back of the cinema.
Yes, if you're of a childish mind, there's kind of a sniggery moment.
Does Harry's wand go...
It's not Harry on Harry Potter.
He turns the camera and raises his eyebrows, you know.
No, okay.
Ron Weasley's sister's done rather well for herself, is all I can say.
See, Jen is not a fan. Jen thinks Harry Potter could do better.
Right. Well, he's turned into, obviously, a very attractive young man.
You dirty old woman.
Oh, come on, I don't fancy him. But he has. He's a very pretty person. And obviously, this is the problem with these films, in a way, is that you're stuck with the same cast.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go... Not
okay, maybe not
stuck.
But
yes,
but
it's a good decision to stay with the same cast,
yes.
I think, generally speaking. But yeah, it does mean... It's weird, because Ginny Weasley, the actress who plays her, she's not, I'd say Emma Watson is hotter. put it that way. Right. She's legal, it's fine. It's just weird, it's okay. Not wrong. But Ginny Weasley, she's not particularly hot. Mm. You know, so wow, I can see why Harry's going for her. But the character is very sweet. And she's not unattractive, but she's just not your sort of typical.
Is she ginger?
She is.
Then what's wrong with her?
You've just answered your own question.
Racist. Racist. The prejudice on this show.
Oh, mind you, having said
appalling.
That, there are photos out today, which are up on the Movie Banter website already, actually, of Scarlett Johansson as the Black Widow in Iron Man 2.
Ah.
And that's her in sort of black leather costume with red hair.
Right.
Scarlett Johansson with red hair.
It's not a bad combination.
Oh, yes. Anyway, back to Harry Potter.
The clue to the name is Scarlett, you see? She should have done it a long time ago.
Yeah, so I can see your point in that Ginny Weasley is... Maybe, yeah, I don't know, if you're thinking in terms of Harry could do better for himself, then possibly. But I think the characters work well enough, they've got enough history together, you can see why they're getting towards being together.
Fair dues. But the casting, it's a very good cast, anyway. I mean, adult cast in particular.
It's always been good in the Harry Potter films, getting the best of British actors, isn't it?
Really? Oh, yes.
They get some
Always think they're going to be running out, but then you get, like, Jim Broadbent in this one, and he's phenomenally good.
Yeah.
And
brilliant, yeah.
To the extent that you think, he was in, you know, one of the five...
Yeah, that's what he must have been, yeah.
No, he's new to this.
In the trailer I saw, he comes across as a very lovely, kind, wizardly man, which probably means he's quite sinister.
No, it's a good balance, because he's very close to being a slightly dirty old man, but he's not. He's on the right side of it, because he's someone who is... Well, no, because his character is kind-hearted and nice and, you know, a good teacher, but the phrase I use is he collects students. He spots up-and-coming bright young stars and sort of wants to take them under his wing and help them out. And in return, then he's sort of essentially friends with famous wizards, and so they get him tickets and get him into stuff and do him favours. And it's slightly favouritism to a degree, but it could be very easily tipped over into him coming across as dirty old man saying, "Hello, Harry, I want you to do me a favour." And it's not at all. But it's all on the right leg. Unless you're really deviant, you never look at a scene between them and think, "Oh dear, that's what he's after." It's always the right way.
Someone with web access out there right now and a lot of free time is cutting it together, I'm sure. It'll be on YouTube shortly.
Almost certainly. Although given the whole slash fic thing, does this mean anything to either of you? Clearly not. It's something that a friend of mine mentioned to me a while ago, and essentially it's fan created fictional porn. Between fictional characters,
right.
But things like, you know, Snape and Harry Potter,
nice.
Yeah, with, you know, writings and pictures I know. Yeah, I've never sought any of it out, but I know it's out there.
I read online a couple of days ago. Alternative endings for Back to the Future films.
Oh yes.
Someone's put one which is, and a lot of them are rubbish to be honest. But someone's put one which is that at the end of the first film. Marty's, you know, about to go back to the future in the 50s. He's in the DeLorean. Doc is doing the whole thing of getting the two bits of wire putting together, but his arms are blown off. Marty doesn't travel back to the future. He ends up just having to care for Doc in his home without any arms for the rest of his life. So it's one possible.
His mother's
still pursuing him, I
probably. Exactly. Trying to fend off her advances all the time. Yeah.
So he ends up an incestuous care worker.
Pretty much. Nice. Exactly, yeah.
That's every young boy's dream.
That's the sequel. Exactly, yes.
Yeah, that'll be a slightly different take on the Back to the Future film.
Exactly,
exactly.
It's a bit weird. We'll be doing a Back to the Future special.
Rather
sorted. We'll be doing a Back to the Future special in future weeks, incidentally.
Yes.
And also later in this episode, or maybe soon, whenever we've wrapped up Harry Potter, we'll be playing in our interview with three particular films chosen by a DeLorean car owner called Stuart, who's also a TV cameraman, and he gave us his thoughts on three good films. So we'll have that
also, yes, it's his DeLorean that there is a photo of on the Movie Banter.
Indeed,
site as well.
Tis there indeed. There for all to admire.
Yes.
We'll wrap up Harry Potter first.
Yes, I think that pretty much does wrap up Harry Potter. I mean, because it's very good opening sequence.
That was one of the things I was wanting to mention.
Mm. Yes, I forgot about that, because it's also a 2.5 hour long film. There's a lot to remember that goes on. But yes, it is very good. It's sort of involving, again, won't make much sense if you haven't seen the rest, but essentially it's bad people doing things. So you just need to know that there are bad people out there doing things. Mm. And including one, I didn't time it, but it's one relatively long tracking shot that's going to be mostly effects rather than a real shot. But it's all good enough. Essentially you come over London, but then swoop down into the streets and around the place, and it's just one continuous thing. Mm. So going
it's almost
up,
like
and down
being
the Thames.
On a ride, actually. It was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you sort of,
jolting
it goes from just thinking, oh, so a helicopter shot over the Thames, and now the helicopter flying down the streets at street level, and then okay, that's clearly not. Yeah. So it's going to be heavily artificial, but
it
looks
made me
extremely
actually
good.
Go wow.
Actually, I think that's an idea for Desert Island Flicks in future weeks, which is best single shot.
Oh, nice!
Because there's again a lot of the films they're showing off now with these long tracking shots, and there's been some really good ones over the years. So I think we should do that in a future week. I think we'll do that.
Hmm. There was one thing that I would have liked a little bit more of. I didn't.
Popcorn? I'd be surprised.
Oh no, popcorn out on that one. That was fine. Was just. Obviously, in the beginning, part of the thrill of the Harry Potter was them going to this amazing new school and magic being in every single part of the building. And there's things like ghosts, moving chairs, pictures that move. And I mean, it's all very magical. Whereas in this, I don't know whether maybe us as spectators are meant to have just taken it for granted, but there really wasn't anything of them. And I think, not that necessarily they should be in the foreground, but just background touches, it would have been quite nice just to have a little bit more.
Yeah, I can see that point, and it's an accurate point. At the same time, it didn't occur to me at all until you mentioned it afterwards. So I wasn't thinking there was enough going on that I wasn't thinking that it needed to be fleshed out. If that's the right word, so in the background, because I was kind of absorbed in the foreground.
It's just
so
if you liked them before, I kind of missed.
Yeah, it's a fair point because there is that. There's no Dawn French as the fat lady. There's no real
John
painting.
Cleese is the
yes. Although, but say, I mean, thinking about it, I don't know how often. When they were last in the films, anyway.
Yeah.
Because as the books got longer and longer, the films have had to get longer and longer.
Yeah.
They've cut out what they can.
Yes.
But they've still got to make sacrifices. But as I say, it could all be background decoration. But I didn't miss it. No. But I can see that it's gone.
Mm. Anyway.
Could it have done with being Harry Potter 3D? Is this?
Well,
I'm thinking the studios, you know, Mr.
Yeah, Trigger. The opening sequence would have been very good. Yeah. Quidditch match would have been good as well. Yes. There's not a huge amount going on, but there's sort of practices and stuff. Which could be entertaining.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't. There's not really enough action in it to warrant 3D. I don't think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because lots of it is more just discussing things, which is like I say, in the last film had ended with a big fight sequence, which is spectacular, and this doesn't have anything quite on that level. But it's more the human character side of it.
Yeah, which is the development.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a good film. I enjoyed it.
Yes.
Good. Yeah, well, I look forward to seeing it.
Definitely a go.
I'll be giving it a go. Yeah. Giving it a go, certainly, yes. Well, let's play in that clip from Stuart then, shall we?
Yes,
have our little... we haven't done this for a few weeks, actually, but...
True.
Do let us know, did you miss it? Did you not want it in the first place? You can email us, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk. This is our... We had largely comedians telling us about their three favourite films of a film, a current release, something of the last few years, and an all-time favourite. And this week, we put it over to Stuart Nichols, DeLorean car owner, and TV video cameraman.
Yes, and Back to the Future fan.
Back to the Future fan, indeed. But it's not. He didn't pick one of the... Back to the Future is one of the three, you see.
No.
I think he's sick of it by now. He does have Back to the Future conversations most days of his life.
Well, if you go to own the DeLorean and put a flux capacitor in it...
Exactly.
Then it's his own fault.
Exactly. So, here's what he thought of some films.
We are here with... cameraman and DeLorean car owner Stuart Nichols, who will tell us about some of his favourite films, particularly a more recent release. Can you recommend something?
Well, something I've just literally the last film I saw in the cinema was The Hangover, which genuinely I really enjoyed it. I took my girlfriend along and my friend Gav, and it, not necessarily you wouldn't have thought the sort of film that my girlfriend would have liked, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But she genuinely really really kind of chuckled at it because it's sort of slightly for the older generation. It's there's a few more. It's shot quite nicely, if I'm being absolutely honest.
Right.
It's not shot like your American Pie, where it's all about the gags and slapstick comedy. It's actually, there's some nice shot sequences in it, which obviously is a camera.
Exactly, you admire, don't you?
Appreciate in a way. But it was just a good film.
Yeah.
And then almost relived it about a week later. Actually.
Oh dear, really?
I had a 13-hour session in London and got the first train out of London back home.
Right.
Which is amazing.
Was there a chicken and a tiger in
there might well have been.
A bacon in a car door. Not good. Yeah, okay. Good, okay, and something from the last few years, perhaps?
Okay, a film,
DVD.
Well, a DVD that I really love watching, even now, and is Sideways, actually.
Oh, yes.
Maybe I'm trying to let on the fact that I've just turned 30 and I'm desperately trying to fly into my youth, which is kind of what happened in that film.
Yeah.
Really beautifully shot, really lovely story, and really kind of tried to make, I really desperately wanted to try and get involved in knowing about wine.
He did, yeah. I'm not a wine man, but after seeing that.
Yeah, it makes you actually just kind of go, I want to kind of go and taste
the vineyards.
It looked like a great thing.
Yeah.
So that's one definitely I'd recommend as a DVD.
Yeah.
So.
And then something from, I don't know, an all-time favourite, or something from even further back in
annals of history. Not necessarily like an all-time favourite of mine, but my first ever DVD, sorry, first ever film that I saw, it was on VHS, my mum probably recorded it off TV or something, was Hoppity Goes to Town, right?
Not exactly up there with many people.
I think it was on Film 4 the other day, actually, which is why it kind of reminded me of it.
What is it about then? I'll be honest, I'm new to Hoppity Goes to Town.
Hoppity Goes to Town. Okay, it was animated in 1941.
Right.
And it's an amazing animation for those sort of times. It's not Disney or anything like that. I think it was Universal or something like that, did it? And it's about a grasshopper who falls in love with a bumblebee.
Right.
And then the human, where they live, the humans are then trying to build a high-rise, you know, Empire State Building or something like that, because that's all going on in that period. Yeah. And it's about how they're thrown out of where they live, and they've got to go and find somewhere else to live and all that. Yeah. And there's like a side plot of a beetle that actually, like an older beetle, like an older gentleman, but who's also trying to marry the honeybee sort of thing. And all. It's just really, and it's all kind of like really 1940s sort of music. It's fantastic. It's genuinely really,
particularly as an antidote to the Disney stuff from those days.
There's some great tunes in it and stuff like that.
Oh, really? Hoppity Goes to Town. There you go.
Get it on DVD.
Lovely. Thank you much indeed.
No worries.
There you go. That was Stuart and his thoughts. Rather, I don't think anyone could have predicted Hoppity Goes to Town.
No,
really.
It's an unusual choice.
Unusual choice, yeah.
But can't argue the Hangover.
Indeed. Can't argue the Hangover.
Especially
not a loud argument. Exactly. That's always a bad idea.
I noticed he did pick The Hangover and then sideways a film about wine. He's quite, two films about drunkenness and one cartoon. What a man he is,
was
really.
Was the other one Leaving Las Vegas?
probably was, really, yeah.
You start off with Sideways, then you get The Hangover, and then the alcoholism and death.
If there was a cartoon about alcoholism, he'd have picked it, I'm pretty sure, but... unfortunately, there isn't one. So, anyway.
There should be.
There should be, shouldn't there?
I can see a kid's cartoon character alcoholism.
Must be. Hey, kids. I saw... Because I saw Ice Age 3D this week, and you talked about it last week. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But one thing I did find was, you know, a lot of these kids' films, to make it more family, you know, so it's for the adults, whatever, for the kids, apart from just putting jokes in that the adults will get, but also, there's normally an overriding theme. It's normally like... friends stick together or something like that. That's normally the thing, isn't it, with Toy Story or any of those sort of things. And it seemed to me this one was about, you know, the mammoth sapping kids, and you got the little, what's he called, the sloth,
Sid.
You got Sid walking around going, oh, but you know, they're going to move on and all that sort of thing. And so a lot of the message seemed to, and then he was saying, oh, I'll be a mother, that's right, and he got some little baby dinosaurs. And then the whole film was largely about him realising it's more of a responsibility than he thought. Although it's odd that a kid's film nowadays, the main message is mothering and fathering is difficult. Don't rush into parenthood. And as if, you know...
Yeah, all you seven-year-olds watching this, maybe don't go out straight away and adopt a child.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, teenage pregnancies, you know, the rates are getting higher. but still, I think it's an odd
message.
They
get charged for teenage pregnancies now?
The rates are very high indeed. Yeah, terrible. Yeah, it's shocking. Anyway,
right.
Crashing on. Let's have In This Week in Movie History.
Yay!
Okay, don't look at the screen. There's not many this week, so it's going to be a short one. But anyway.
So middle of July is a barren period.
It is, rather. I will tell you the event, you tell me the film. Okay, July the 13th, 2305. Ooh. That's right, in the future. Jean-Luc Picard is born.
It's going to have to be... I'm going to hazard a guess at First Contact.
Well, actually, Generations is what it's mentioned. It's born in France, turns out. Hence the name Jean-Luc. That works. July the 14th, 1789. Also a French theme here. Bastille falls. French Revolution, etc.
I'm going to guess... Well,
it's not Antoinette, is it?
That's what I was going to say.
I don't think it's mentioned in that exact date. In fact, I've got here, Carry On, Don't Lose Your Head.
Oh, so
nice. I'm sure there is also mentioned in other films as well. But anyway. Then back to the sci-fi again. July the 18th, 1951. Klaatu arrives on Earth with Gort and a cautionary message to halt experiments with violence, atomic energy and space travel.
No idea.
The day the Earth stood still.
Indeed. Yeah, there you are. Indeed. So the day the Earth stood still was Tuesday, I believe. Wednesday sped up again. So finally for this week, July the 19th, 1879, Doc Holliday commits his first murder, killing a man for shooting up his New Mexico saloon.
Could be a couple. Any tombstone?
Probably, yes. But also Wyatt Earp.
Oh, I see.
So, yes. But no, it's mentioned in a bunch of films, actually.
Toss up between the two.
Exactly. So anyway, that was in this week of movie history. Hey. A short one this week, but you know, some weeks.
Short but potent.
Some weeks, not much happens. So, oh, actually, deal with it.
People need to make more films where stuff happens in July.
Indeed. Really, that's exactly. That's the lesson. I think
it's the filmmaker's fault. Really.
If we've learned something, then that's clearly not it. So let's move on to Bruno. The guy who did Borat. Also, people forget, of course, that he has had one other big film thing himself, Da Ali G movie.
Yes.
In the House. Ali G in the House, wasn't it?
That's yes.
Right. Which was clearly awful. And he probably came away from that thinking, got to rethink how to launch this Hollywood
well,
career.
Yeah,
and he's done it, really, hasn't he?
Yes. So I was only wondering, the Ali G show was pretty much what Bruno and Borat had been, which is interviews with unsuspecting people.
Sure.
But then Ali G was a fictional film with him just doing stuff.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if the thought occurred to him to kind of make a semi-documentary comedy thing with Ali G as the character, but then couldn't do it or couldn't get the backing or decided it wasn't doable.
I imagine,
safer format. Or something.
Exactly. Yeah. I imagine it was someone else's idea to do Ali G as a fiction thing, and I'm sure that they clearly went, oh, that didn't work. And he's then went away and tried and said, well, convince someone to. Because Borat really was quite almost, I wouldn't say groundbreaking because it was just a bit of flippant fun, but I don't recall a time you've seen sort of prank stuff done on the big screen.
Because Jackass sort of did it. But not really.
Yes. I personally found Bruno, a mixture, really, of amusing at times. Mind-numbingly, can't look at the screen, embarrassingly awkward at other times.
Yeah.
Not as funny, I thought, throughout as Borat. I think Borat is just as funny a character generally.
And
but
the thing is that Borat's also more... Borat's a more likable character because he's sort of a bumbling idiot.
He's not even
a bumbling idiot, he's just sort of a naive innocent.
He is. Yeah. He is more likable, isn't he?
Yeah, whereas Bruno is sort of narcissistic, wannabe famous. And also the story, because Borat was very straightforward, you know, I am a foreigner making a documentary, let me talk to you.
Yes.
And that's the story, and so the whole thing works on its own level.
Yeah.
Whereas Bruno is, I mean, it's almost half fictional. Of him saying, I used to be famous and then stuff happened and now I'm not famous and now I want to become famous by talking to people. And so it's a little bit more hit and miss. Yeah, there's a couple of bits of him talking to just random people in the street and setting them up for stuff. And then one or two celebrity things.
Mm.
And it's a little bit more spread out and spread more thinly. But it's still all watchable. It just doesn't hang together as well.
It doesn't
Bruno
at all, does it?
No.
And Borat also, you know, his story really was about going from one part of America to another. And all he wanted to do was find out about Americans.
Yeah.
And so he does, and that's why the setups work. Whereas in this one, you can just tell he's gone out and tried to prank as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And then looked at it in the cutting room and gone, okay, how can we attach a plot to this via voiceovers?
Yeah.
And so suddenly it flips between saying, I want to be famous, so I'm going to be famous by interviewing celebrities, and then saying, actually, I'll be famous by adopting a baby, and then be famous by...
Yeah, so I'm going to be straight, exactly. Be ultra gay, and it's...
So he's throwing a lot on the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yes.
And some do, some don't. Really.
Which, I mean, it comes across more like sort of lots of separate sketches in a way.
It is, yeah.
But it's still, I still enjoyed it a lot, but there are one or two... Jenny did what I knew she, or knew slash hoped she would do.
What?
Which is, because you, if in any film someone's doing something that is so obviously a bad idea, you tend to end up just sort of whimpering and crawling into your seat in the hope that they won't do what you think they're going to do.
Yes.
And Bruno is pretty much this for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And so you were doing that a lot.
I call it the Lassie complex.
Yes.
Which just save the kids. Just do it. Stop.
Which always entertains me. But I can't think which bit it was now. But there are at least a couple of moments in Bruno where I found myself doing the same thing. And he's like, no, you're not going to... Oh, you have as well.
Yeah,
you?
Yeah, you went there.
Which is very entertaining, but it can be awkward to watch. I think also Borat sort of had a point to make about xenophobia.
Exactly,
sort of.
Yeah.
Whereas Bruno doesn't really... Because it's not even... The fact that he's gay isn't really used specifically much. I mean, it's used in context of sketches and setups. But I'd like to think he could make the whole film could have been getting people's reactions to him being gay.
Yes.
And sort of showing, you know, shining a light on prejudice in that way in America. And it's not really. It's more people's
just
reactions
provoking.
To a half-naked man
wearing
leather.
That's my real
and
problem
that's
with
not
it.
Quite the same
it's
thing.
Exactly my problem with it. In that Borat, you're laughing at the people going, well, your prejudices have been exposed there.
Yes. You're talking to a normal man in a suit and you're skewering yourself.
Yes. Whereas a lot of the time in Bruno... you're thinking, well, okay, what he's done there is he's taken out a giant, bizarre sex toy bicycle thing into the street and kind of, you know, scared some people in a way that, yeah, to be fair, their reaction is correct. You should be frightened by a guy coming into the street with that. You know, some of the things he does are too provocative.
Yeah.
It's also testing people's politeness, though, as well, because it should be, like, there was one bit which is a self-defence class.
Yes.
Which just goes ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because of the weapons he decides to use. Yes. And there's no way on Earth. Okay, there is a tiny way on Earth, but we're talking about a very, very select geography here, of that kind of thing happening. But it was watching the embarrassment of the instructor trying to be polite and seemed deliberately not to be homophobic that he carried on.
Yes. He goes to see a pastor or a vicar who runs a program to try and make gay people straight. And while you can object or not to the morality or not of that, that's not really dealt with as an issue. It's because he essentially just comes across as a nice man who, if someone comes to him and say, "I'm gay, I don't want to be, how can you help me?" then he'll try and help them. And that's questionable in various ways, but it's not... He doesn't sit there saying unreasonable things. He's just faced with Bruno going slightly overboard, and he's trying to deal with them as best he can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not as funny as it could be if it, I think, it's slightly more subtle or slightly more downplayed.
There are a few things which are obviously just... I'm not sure if necessary. I mean, obviously, they're provoking, but things like, as a gay man going to a swingers party, a very, very straight swingers party, and deliberately trying to get the guys to look him in the eye whilst being busy.
But I'm also...
Yeah.
The trouble is there are one or two bits that are obviously set up, staged for the film. And where Borat had them as well, largely the bits with him and his manager. And Bruno has that with him and his assistant.
Mm.
But I'm fairly sure that the end of the swingers party is entirely staged.
Yeah, I'm sure that is.
He ends up in a situation with a woman that ends comedically. But I'm fairly sure, because we see a shot of her earlier on, apparently at the swingers party, but if I'm remembering the shots right, we sort of see all the swingers chatting and the camera appears to cut to this woman. But I think she was actually, it's just filmed separately and sort of makes it look like she was there.
I think she was.
Yeah, because it's all far too over the top. Yeah. But, which is fine, and it's still funny, but it means... With Borat, you're almost entirely just... You think, okay, this bit's just a set-up comedy plot, and now this is all real.
Yeah.
It's and so, whereas this one you don't know, Bruno, you're trying to work it out.
Yeah. It's a constant battle, even when you've even got... scenes, where things go a bit too far, and they directly address the cameramen, who before are just not meant to be there at all. You know, it's like, so what exactly is going on?
Yeah, so you need... Because if you know something's meant to be... set up, then you'll laugh at it in a certain way or not. I mean, if something is real, it doesn't have to be that awkward or funny for you to find it very funny. But then if it's actually set up, then you think, well, that's not funny enough to be set up. If it was real, I'd laugh more.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of need to know what it's going for in order to react properly.
I would say the bits that particularly worked for me, I thought the latter half, I thought was much better than the first half.
Yeah,
I think largely because the first half was more celebrity fashion based, and the last half was more about the homophobia thing. Particularly, the final scene which I thought was very effective.
The cage match.
Cage match, very, very effective.
Yeah, that was actually quite impressive.
And actually, some of the moments in that do border on the, you know, making the rest of it almost worthwhile. In seeing the prejudice he exposes there.
Yes, it's a very good payoff.
Actually, grown men crying.
Yes.
Which is bizarre to watch. Also, I thought the other bit which really got me was the... he's interviewing parents who are trying to ask what they would put their babies through for a photo shoot. And that was frightening. Absolutely frightening. How? And that's more of what it should be in the film,
yes,
I think.
Yeah,
it should more be stuff that exposes the undercurrent in America.
It's about people trying to be famous, isn't it? Or... It's about people's hunger for fame and how far they're going to go. Maybe even that's the point with that self-defense class. It was like, this person's being deliberately filmed. How far is he going to go?
Yes, but it wasn't targeted well enough, I think. No. Like that.
But
yeah,
but that's the more interesting point.
Parents, yes, exactly. But the parents and babies thing. And you can see, well, I'd like to think anyway you can see, or maybe just knowing the truth, you can appreciate his mindset.
Yeah.
When he's just sat there and sort of runs a couple of ideas past a couple of parents... And they jump straight on board, have no problem with anything. And you can just see the cogs whirring, thinking, blimey, they're going straight for this. Okay, what else can I think of that's ridiculously over the top? How about trying this?
Well,
and they still
the
go
great
for
about
it.
That scene, it does look like, unlike other scenes, that he's almost flummoxed himself.
Yeah.
It looks like he's run dry.
Yeah, pretty much.
Obscene
I thought you would
can...
have stormed out
exactly.
by this point.
And by the end of it, he looks like he's making it up, saying, great, you've got the job. Here's what we're going to make your toddler do in this photo shoot. And he looks like he's making it up, and she still says fine.
Yeah, when she's thinking,
it's amazing.
Oh. Yeah, when there's, I won't get into the specifics, but he's asking how a toddler could prepare for a photo shoot, and you can see this mother thing just thinking that's not really possible. I'll make it happen. One or another, it's going to happen.
Ridiculous!
It's just painful.
Ridiculous.
Actually, the chat show was quite entertaining as well.
Yeah,
I'm fairly sure because the the chat show host was in on it. Must have known.
I think must have known.
Because of all the preparation that went in. And yet, I don't even know if the security guards were
informed. I don't think they were.
And that's, actually, that's one thing I came away from it thinking as well. That Sacha Baron Cohen, I think it's far braver than Borat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Borat, you know, there are times when people turn on him a bit. But there are times in Bruno when he's genuinely risking his own health and safety. Because some of these people could actually just have beaten him to death.
Well,
or worse.
People almost...
Not worse, sorry.
Trying to. It's when he decides to go to the Middle East and try and, you know, propose peace. And these are real people that he's, for want of a better word, mincing around, deliberately provoking.
Yes. Especially his rabbi outfit, when he ends up being chased down the street.
He does, because people are obviously taking... I felt quite sorry, actually, for some of the people. Well, just taking real... offence, because it's just so disrespectful for them.
That's the thing. Yeah, when he arrives in the Middle East, in, you know, very religious areas where people are dressed respectfully, and he's utterly not. And yeah, thinking that's not just having a go or exposing hypocrisy as such. That is
no, that's more just taking
just
what,
annoying
taking what
people
expect in a certain culture and just offending them.
Which
is why it's.
It was
it's
more
still...
that they were a little pastiches of what they were wearing already. It was like we're deliberately taking the he's
he looked like
taking
he was just
the mick
taking
out
the
of
yeah,
them,
yeah, exactly.
Rather than taking the mick out for himself.
Yeah, but... which isn't. I wouldn't even say it's sort of it's crossing the line over offensive, because it's not that it's offensive. It's more just. It's not funny enough to warrant doing it, really.
So I'd recommend it with qualifications, really.
But just be aware, if anyone... I think anyone of a sensitive disposition who's easily offended really will be.
Well, it's can we play the clip here? This is from an Irish cinema. It's the automatic information line. So it's pre-recorded message given by the manager. It's a little independent cinema, so they haven't got the backing of, you know, Odeon or Cineworld, who have this, you know, a paid voiceover artist to tell you about the films. So we'll play in now. This is what you get if you phone this cinema.
Thank you for calling the Diamond Cinema here in Navan. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince opens here on Wednesday, plays Wednesday and Thursday at 3 and 8 and carries at 12 a cert. But today we're showing Bruno at 3:15 and 8:20. And it carries a 16 cert. Now, Bruno is particularly vile. It leads to a hell of a lot of complaints of people who say, we didn't think it was that bad. It is that bad. It'll offend every prejudice in the book, believe me. So don't come on after the film and tell us how horrible it was. One or two people have enjoyed it, though. Ice Age 3, wow. PG 13.
So there you go. I think that's a review in itself, isn't it, really?
Well, yeah, because the guy sounds like... He sounds as if he knows it's not for him, but he's willing to accept it might be for some people, because he calls it vile, which sounds... But he says, one or two people have
enjoyed it.
So
after
at least
he's giving better address the balance, you know, exactly. Well, it's also interesting, over there it's 16 rated, whereas over here it's 18 rated.
Yes.
Although actually this week they're bringing out a 15 rated version.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've ever done it in the cinemas, because a lot of teenagers are going to see it and being turned away. So.
Which is, it's a weird one, because some people are saying, no, this could signal the death of the 18 because it's going to be a commercial, which is, it may be true, but I think Bruno's a relatively rare example in that it's not... I think lots of films are rated 18 because there's so much 18 rated content in it, or the whole idea of the film is. I think with Bruno, there's only one or two bits that need to be cut out in order to make it, so it doesn't really change the film much.
Oh, I think they've cut out 1 minute 45, I think,
is
all
they've
cut.
Which isn't that
much
at all.
Which is not much at all. I can instantly think of the bits they're cutting. It's just wrong.
Is it possibly the TV show that they show the focus group? And at the very end, when you just, something shouts, Bruno, on the screen.
Oh, yes.
That shot could probably go. Anyway.
One question before we wrap up on Bruno, then. One question is, where can he go now? Because he can't do this again. People know him, and he can't disguise his face much more.
That was another thought, actually, that occurred, which is that I do wonder if part of the reason they didn't have that many live, you know, setting up people situation is because he's now... Because Borat's relatively well-known. And so, he's now running out of material.
I bet as well that there's actually so much on the cutting room floor that people who got it straight away and just worked him out.
Although I think they said that with Paula Abdul that it was all sort of set up through publicists and similar. And she signed a release already saying whatever. Yeah. Just thought she was meeting with a weird film crew and didn't clock him as him. I mean, she knows who Sacha Baron Cohen is, but it didn't register.
Yeah.
And then a bit later on, I think maybe when the film was coming out, or someone said to her, oh, I see you're in the new Sacha Baron Cohen film. And she just went, no, I haven't filmed anything with... And then suddenly thought back to
this weird... Yeah.
So, he can still catch people out.
But it's,
but not
it's telling
well.
That... I don't think there were many celebrity cameos in Borat, but the fact that Paula Abdul is the only celebrity they can get.
Yes.
They must have tried, and I think Harrison Ford briefly.
Yeah. I want to know if that's real or not.
I think it's real.
It's probably real. Because I think they would have made more of a deal.
Yeah, I think it is. They must have somehow, probably afterwards then, said, can you sign this consent form just for us to, because like, he can't have signed anything before that.
No.
Most people, of course, they sign it beforehand.
Yeah.
But he can't have signed anything before he did that bit. So I think they must have found him afterwards and said, look, we just want to use that one bit of you just saying that to the camera. Can we just
that would probably be the better way. I'd hope that his reaction was when he just thought he was being hounded by a general paparazzi crew.
Yeah.
And we found out what it was. He then thought, oh, right,
fair
this
enough.
Works.
Yeah,
and he softened.
Yeah. But I don't know where, you know, he can't, I don't think Sacha Baron Cohen can do this again.
No.
Having said that, I'm sure he's earned enough from Borat alone on DVD sales.
Well, true.
To mean he doesn't have to work again. But he'll want to do something creative, and I don't quite know what he'll do.
Yeah, because while he can do... it's a bit of a step down.
I mean, 10 years... To be honest, if he lies low for 10 years, he could age enough, and he'll have changed his face.
True.
To be able to do it again, but just for the next few years, he can't really.
No, and I mean, because while he's a comic actor generally, I mean, he was in Talladega Nights and others, I don't see him just doing that. I think if he did, he could be very good at it, but I get the feeling he'll want to do something slightly more hands-on.
Yes.
But he may have a couple of great fictional comic ideas burgeoning away that'll come forth.
He just needs to do it. Well, a lot of these countries, you know, I read this week, the Ukraine have banned the film.
Oh, really?
Which is a bad thing for him. I'm sure he's there going, ah, look at the sales. But what he could do, learn from that, any country that's banned him, go there and film there.
Yeah.
Because they won't know who he is.
No, very true. So, but at the same time, given that people generally go for an American audience, will an American audience want to watch a film entirely set in the Ukraine with Ukrainians?
Well, maybe not. Maybe not.
Hmm.
Food for thought. Anyway, so that's that film, and that's pretty much the episode, I think, isn't it, really?
I think so, pretty much.
So we'll wrap up with some Desert Island flicks, which this week were Best Childhood Performance.
Inspired
by Harry Potter.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
Despite the fact, with no disrespect to the actors, but none of them are likely to get Best Childhood
Performances.
Mentioned
in this. Yeah,
no.
Exactly. So, any thoughts?
Well, there's a few classics to choose from.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm going to go, a film that I know fairly well, but haven't actually seen for a little while, which is Leon.
Mm.
Or The Professional, as some people may know it.
Because
internationally, I think it's just called that.
Yes. To differentiate from Leon the Pig Farmer.
Quite possibly. Which, of course, featuring Natalie Portman.
Yes.
And Jean Reno, but he wasn't a child.
No.
And Natalie Portman was.
Yeah. Of the two of them, I think Natalie Portman gave the best child performance.
That is true. I think Jean Reno's beard gave the game over.
He could have shaved.
He's the worst child I've ever seen.
Rubbish.
It was appalling. Mind you, Natalie Portman didn't make a particularly good 40-year-old Frenchman.
Well, no, if that's what the category is, then exactly she's down there. So one all, I think we'll call it.
Exactly. It's a score draw.
I think it is.
Between Natalie Portman and Jean Reno.
But yeah, good choice. Good choice.
No, it is. Yeah, it's a very, very good performance.
I don't think she's done as well since. I think that was...
not really.
Thing she's done so far.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, well, as I said before, I think, was it Jed that suggested her as a Meryl Streepian?
Yeah.
I actually kind of agreed. I think she may yet have brilliant performances coming
up. Maybe. Yeah. She was quite good in Closer, I must admit.
Yeah, I think she can do stuff. She just hasn't done all that much yet. But
then again, that's an amazing piece of writing anyway, and I'm pretty sure anyone could have done rather well in that.
I couldn't have done. You've seen me act.
Particularly as the stripper. No, I don't think you could have
That's the bit I could have done remarkably well.
I'd do that to my
I'll show you all right now.
Okay.
The tassels, please.
Anyway. I keep them on just
pasties.
In case.
You never know.
Anyway.
I'm Cornish. I like pasties.
Are they pasties? Surely.
Oh, I don't know.
Otherwise,
I don't
pasties.
Know.
It's pasties. Which you should. Paul owns a pair.
Yeah, don't they? Of pasties.
No,
in my freezer.
Of pasties. You own nipple tassels.
No, I don't.
You
I pass them on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They passed on.
They passed on. Yeah.
They got attached to your nipples and just dropped dead immediately.
Put them on eBay.
As have everyone who's ever come anywhere near them.
One uncareful owner.
I may put up.
Don't even think about it. Don't even think about it.
Mike, you can stop me.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I may put a photo up of Paul demonstrating nipple tassels.
Don't do that.
He's in full black tie.
Yeah,
he just happened to have like two holes cut in his shirt.
That was a photo for a private occasion, and that was...
Wasn't that private?
Oh, well, you know.
Although it did surprise...
Ticket only.
Although it did surprise the, at the time, your relatively new girlfriend, who is now, of course, your good lady wife.
Indeed, that didn't put her off.
I feel it did.
Well, maybe briefly.
The wedding might have come back a year earlier.
Slowed it down anyway, didn't it? Anyway,
moving
on.
I am going to pick Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun. I haven't seen it for a few years, but it's left a pretty strong impression on me. It's an amazing film, and he did an amazing job. It's if you haven't seen it, do go and see it.
Never have.
No, I never have.
It's pretty traumatic, but it's got a good ending, and it's obviously set about...
Does it end with him dressing up as a bat and killing all the bad guys?
No.
Then I'm not interested.
But yeah, no, it's a boy who's it's a family who's living in Japan at the time where the Second World War starts, and he gets separated from his parents and is taken into a prisoner of war camp, and how he survives. And there's also things like Hiroshima going on from the background, and it's got quite a good cast. It's got John Malkovich in it as well. It's a beautiful kind of relationship that he has with the other inmates, as it were, and also a young boy who's also a Japanese pilot. So, but that's just one tiny little thing. Yeah. But very good.
Cool. Sounds good. I must see.
Mm. Very, very good.
And yourself, Mr.
My choice. I'm going to go with Jodie Foster in a little known role. I think it's called The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. So she's 14, and it wasn't at the time. She just made Taxi Driver. And I mean, I could go for the role in Taxi Driver, but I think this one, because this is her film, The Little Girl Lives Down the Lane, is just about her, really. Pretty much lives in a house, pretty much parentless. And a local guy who's a bit creepy keeps on appearing at the house, and she just lives on her own. She's like this 14-year-old, just very self-sufficient, and it's her trying to fend him off, basically. And it's kind of like a play, really. It's all just set in the house, just about her, this guy, and a policeman as well, who, you know, is occasionally part of the story as well. And just, it's a really effective film, particularly a very strong lead, because she says most of the lines in the film. And it's just all about her performance, and just, you know, she's made better films, but in terms of a captivating role, it's that definitely that one for me.
Well,
yeah, she's been very good.
Well, little coincidence, I suppose, that we've all picked films where the child is away from their parents.
True.
Yes, we have.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's probably indicative of what brings out a good child performance.
Indeed. Yeah.
Or the kind of character that tends to have a good performance.
Yeah.
Because
if
the parents are there, then the child actor just goes, "Mum,
can you act for me?
Exactly.
I'll be born too tired.
Finished." Anyway, thank you for tuning in this week. We'll probably leave it there, I think, on that rather fecal note. Do feel free to...
It wasn't an innately fecal note.
Well,
you added a certain fecal tone.
I decided it was. So do feel free to email in your comments, suggestions, film reviews, whatever. Anything you want to add to the discussion.
Or in fact, actually, stuff you'd like to see on the website. Because it's starting to add a bit more random bits and pieces to it.
Yeah, we're developing. Film related things. So you tell us how you like it to develop. And that's a podcast at moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes. Until then, we shall see you next week.
Will do.
Ta-da.
Bye.